Welcome back to the Schneps Connects podcast. I want to remind everyone that you can listen to our podcast at podcast.schnepsmedia.com or find us on all major podcast platforms. We also recently launched schnepsconnects.com, which is our networking club where you can meet up once a month, hear from prominent speakers, and meet new business leaders. But on to the podcast, and I'm excited to have with me today Kieran Harrington, who is the CEO of Riseborough Community Partnership. Kieran brings decades of experience across nonprofit leadership, media, and mission-driven organizations. Before joining Riseborough, he served as Executive National Director of the Pontifical Mission Societies in the U.S., where operational changes he implemented helped increase world mission collections by 9%. Earlier in his career, he founded and led the Sales Media Group, which is a full-service media company. At Riseborough, Kieran leads a community development nonprofit that has been serving New York City for more than five decades. Through an intergenerational model focused on affordable housing, senior care, education, health, and empowerment, the organization works across all five boroughs to revitalize communities and help New York's most vulnerable residents reach their full potential. So looking forward to hearing all about you and the organization, Kieran. Thanks for joining.
Hey, Joshua. Thank you very much for having me.
So you've worn a bunch of different hats throughout your career. I would love for you just to share a little bit about, you know, your journey and what led you to really a mission-driven organization like Riseborough.
Well, you know, I grew up in Jackson Heights, Queens, and Flushing, but I lived most of my adult life in Brooklyn. I kind of try to take the Brooklyn cachet on a little bit. Of course, everyone's trying to take that cachet. But almost all my adult life has been really since I've been about 30 years old, I've been living in Brooklyn. And my experience really was as a young man, as a little boy, always wanting to be for other people. And so from a very young age and into the seminary and studied to be a priest and was ultimately ordained a priest and, and served for 25 years as a priest. In fact, that's where I was recently working as the director of the Pontifical Mission Societies, which was an international nonprofit, basically, which really helped raise funds and send personnel to places like Africa and Asia to serve the church as it was growing, a church that was very poor. And so that was a sort of a natural transition, having done that work, to come here back to Brooklyn and work here at Riseborough, an organization I had known years and years before under its old name, Ridgewood Bushwick.
Wow. Well, that's nice that you have history and understood the organization and its mission. I touched on a little bit, but share the services that you guys offer and what your, you know, real mission is.
Well, Joshua, you know, the first thing to thing is think about 50 years ago, think about what Ridgewood Bushwick looked like. A lot of us, if you're old enough to remember the French Connection, you can think about that great chase scene down Broadway. And you see a area that was really rubble. In fact, as I was a kid growing up, my father was a cop. And he was in the 401 precinct, the old Fort Apache in the Bronx. And our next door neighbor and my best friend's father was a fireman here in Bushwick. And I remember he had images of the fire truck where the glass just melted out of the window as Bushwick was burning. So that was the neighborhood 50 years ago. And the organization really starts as senior centers. 50 years ago, senior centers, who was taking care of the kids? It was the grandparents, right? Because so many people have been affected by the drug epidemic. So seniors were taking care of their kids, and Riseborough starts with seniors and then youth program. And then because these properties were being burned down, they were being conveyed to us by the city to be revitalized and provide affordable housing. And so Riseborough gets into the affordable housing business. But the key aspect of what we're all about is our neighbor is at the center of the equation, right? It's a neighbor who helps a neighbor. And what is their need? Is it that they have need for feeding programs? Is it need for recreation? Is it need for society? Is it need for educational programs? Is it need for housing? Is it need for advocacy? All of that is what Riseborough has been doing. And as you know, now all of a sudden, Bushwick is real bougie. Let me tell you, there is still a lot of poverty in Bushwick and a lot of people who are struggling. And Riseborough brings this suite of services to every member in the community, those who live in our buildings, those who live and work in our community. And of course, because Riseboro now is so tapped out, and I mean, Bushwick is so tapped out in terms of development, we have taken the same learnings that we have gained here in terms of how to build community, how to ensure that there is rich community, and we bring that to other parts of our city, whether it's way up in Inwood where we have senior housing, or out by JFK where we've just opened a new building, Baisley Pond, which was a conversion of a hotel, 319 units, affordable housing, and
Wow.
permanent housing for those who are formerly homeless. And it's really about building community so that people can live side by side with a neighbor, not somebody who is just a faceless other. That's what we're all about here.
Well, it's nice to see that you evolved as the neighborhood evolved and expanded too. I mean, really finding where the services are needed.
It really is astounding. And Riseboro has like 3,500 units of housing, bringing on 1,000 more. We started with really small properties. Think about a lot of our properties, 103 of our properties are eight families or smaller here
Wow.
in Bushwick. So we're talking about real small housing, real neighborly housing that stabilized this community.
Listen, you were talking about, did you say 1,000 more houses are planned to come online?
Coming online, yes.
Which is amazing because this city certainly needs more affordable housing. There's no question that the demand is far greater than the supply. Just from your perspective, it'd be interesting to hear, what do you see as the biggest opportunities and challenges over the next call year, just being able to have more affordable and even supportive housing here in New York.
I'll tell you, insurance poses an existential threat to affordable housing providers.
Interesting.
When you consider how insurance costs have gone vertical, it really imperils the ability of affordable housing providers to continue to bring housing online. This is a major issue. So the governor, of course, is focused on insurance for in the automobile sector.
Yes,
You know,
yes.
in the affordable housing sector, we're four times as more likely to be sued as the market rate. We really believe this is predatory targeting by the trial bar. And it's a real challenge, and it really needs to be solved. It's a problem that, if it isn't solved, will be to detriment to all parties involved. And by the way, you know, this is really lining the pockets of private equity. It's not the person who slips and falls. It's really lining the pockets of private equity who's making these sorts of investments and this sort of predatory practices. But insurance, major concern, existential. I would say the real opportunities are, is I think the governor, who is really taking a look at how can we make changes to the way in which we do environmental reviews and expedite that process, is going to ensure in that process, make it less expensive. That should help bring properties online. And so part
What's
of
an
it.
example of that? Is that example
Well, you
something?
know, so when we do brownfield development,
Okay.
there is a certain testing that has to be involved and community engagement, and that process is now being streamlined, so it won't take 18 months, but you know, could take just a couple of weeks. So those sorts of reforms are going to be very, very meaningful, because as you might imagine, when you have construction financing, there's one interest rate. When you get the permanent financing, there's a difference. So anything you can do to shorten the timeline around construction is really meaningful. And CEQA reform is really doing that. Of course, the city has made, city charter has made some revisions to speed up the process by which affordable housing can be brought to various communities. I think there are some real opportunities for affordable housing. One of the challenges is really going to be, is the equity going to be there to make these projects make sense from a pencil out from a financial perspective? That's one thing. You know, they even at the federal level, there's been some expansion of the LIHTC. That's really positive. But the question is going to be, will equity be there to make this really happen? So there are lots of really positive developments on the development front, but there are some real challenges to the sustainability of affordable housing providers. And by the way, you know, like when I take a look at our insurance premiums, our liability insurance premiums in 1 year went from like $4.6 to $9 million.
Wow.
So that just gives you a sense of the order of magnitude. And, we're really not alone. And I've been talking to other CEOs of other nonprofits who do this, and we're all kind of experiencing the same pinch. And by the way, it's not just the providers of affordable housing. Even market rate folks are, this environment is making it very challenging to really insure properties. I think that an area where Riseborough has really been expanding, and it's important to note that for us, we don't do temporary housing for those who are formerly homeless. What we really are is about providing permanent housing. So Riseborough Community Partnership is the full name of our organization. RB, Riseborough for Ridgewood Bushwick, where we started. Our whole model and methodology is about building community, and the way you build community is partner with other organizations. And so we partner with for-profit developers. We partner with other not-for-profit developers because there are some services that other people can do better than we can. And we want to partner with folks to make sure that the best services are being delivered to the community, the people who we're serving.
Well, listen, that's great work because it makes the city better when you build up individual neighborhoods, particularly those that need support. You talked about some major challenges. That insurance sounds like a substantial challenge. When you became CEO, were there particular challenges that you faced that you had to navigate or things that you really had at the top of your list as far as the organization?
I would say Riseborough is a phenomenal organization that does a lot. It grew real fast. And when you grow real fast, there are some real challenges. And the challenges really were related to having a clear picture of our financial situation. So it's kind of like flying a plane without an instrument panel, and that can get hairy at times, and particularly you don't want the plane inverted. And we face some real challenges, but I think we're past that moment now. We have some other challenges. As I said, we have, so here, just give you a sense of our business model. And those 103 properties that we have, these 8 units or smaller, our average cost of rent is about $850 for a 2 or 3 bedroom apartment.
Wow.
My cost of operating those places, 1500. So immediately you're upside down, because how do you operate when your rent, by the way, and this is the reality of the city, the lack of affordability in the city, 20% of my tenants have a hard time paying their rent on time. So I deal with significant arrearage. So even though the rent is deeply, deeply affordable, I got people who are struggling with arrearage, and nobody's capping the cost related to the expense side of things. That's new roofs and boilers and local laws which require energy and infrastructure upgrades. Those expenses are not capped. The insurance expense, which is about $2,500 a unit, is not capped. So, before I get a quarter of the year is going right to insurance costs. Now, that's before I even get involved in paying the supers and porters. So the business model there has some real unique challenges. The way we operate as a nonprofit is, of course, our development and the development fees and the fees that we earn as a result of the development, we plow back into the business to help sustain those other deeply affordable projects. But in the long term, there needs to be a fix. And I think that the mayor and this new administration is serious about trying to fix some of these challenges, whether there be a fix around tenant court, whether there be some real renewed focus on preservation. I think that the mayor, and certainly I think the governor as well, I think there is a focus on this, and I'm confident that we can partner with them to get that done.
Being in a mission-driven, career, even before, you came to Riseborough, what do you think are some leadership lessons that you could share, for the nonprofit sector, but really for any business leader?
I try not to see problems. And when I say that, I want to see, because problems tend to say, oh, I got to solve something. I try to enter into the mystery of the people whose lives we're serving. What I mean by that is I heard a great story from one of our tenants. This guy, he came to live in a Riseborough building years and years ago. His family, they were really plagued by the drug crisis. His parents were both drug addicts and died very young, in and out of prison. And of course, he followed suit. and he got evicted from our property, went to jail, got evicted, came back, lived in one of our properties, cycle repeated itself, got evicted. And the third time it took. And I say that because we're not just an organization to give people second chances. A lot of people need third and fourth and fifth chances. And everybody wants to say, okay, we'll give you a second chance, but a lot of people need third and fourth and fifth chances. And that's the kind of organization we are. And it's a real testament to my colleagues all around this organization who are meeting people each day. I have colleagues who deal with people who are getting evicted, which, as you can imagine, if you're getting evicted, that's like the worst thing that could be happening to you. I was speaking to a woman last night, one of our tenants, some small children who've been sick, not paying her rent, and she's in eviction proceedings. This is the worst thing that could be happening.
Yeah, it's scary when you
The
lose the
worst,
roof
it's the
over your
worst
head.
thing. And our employees will encounter that person and try to walk them through the process and help them to stay in there, prevent homelessness, right? So we're about preventing homelessness. I got to run a business. Like, people got to pay their rent, because if they don't pay their rent, I can't run a business. But we don't want people to be homeless. I'm so impressed by my colleagues who every day encounter the individual person. And it's not just one of many, but they realize, like, this is the crisis moment for this individual, and they got to bring their whole present. They have to be entirely present to that person in that moment. And I think that's what it is about being mission driven. Human beings are mysteries, not problems to be solved. And we got to kind of encounter the mystery of this person and accompany them through the mystery of the circumstances of their life that brought them to this place. And I think that for most people, the real challenge that they face is isolation and loneliness. And I think this is particularly exacerbated during the pandemic, right? But what people need to know is that they're being accompanied, that they're not alone. They're not going to be left out to dry, that someone is on their side. And I may not be able to solve their problems, but I'm not going to leave them alone as we're journeying through the problems.
Yeah, I like what you
And
said about mystery. I never heard that reference before.
occupational hazard,
Right,
Josh.
there you go. Exactly.
That to me is at the heart of this. This is not a dollars and cents proposition. I have to run a business. If there is no money, there's not going to be a mission. So we have to run a business, and we have to be responsible how we run a business and be stewards. But at the same time, I don't think I'm going to be judged by how much money Riseboro makes. What I'm judged by is how many lives have we impacted?
But I guess that's still critical for you to do your fundraising or get grants. So
That's right.
how does that play into everything, and how can people, make contributions or get involved?
First thing is we love volunteers and we thrive on volunteers. I need people to help us on Thanksgiving delivering Meals on Wheels to our seniors. I need Christmas, the holidays. We need to put people in the streets because we're delivering a lot of meals for folks. So I'm looking for volunteers all the time to help with toy drives and garden improvements, because we do a lot of sustainability around gardens, that sort of thing. So we're looking for volunteers all the time. We don't want people's money. We want their souls. We want to
That's
bring them in. That's it. Let's get
it.
them in to work in the mission. Because what I know is that when people get hooked onto the mission, the other stuff figures itself out. And so we need folks to get involved and say, you know what, I really want to help my neighbor by painting, by improving the conditions in one of our senior centers. We have 10 senior centers. Like, how do we improve the
Wow.
conditions in those senior centers? How do I help with the Zumba programs or the yoga programs or the reading programs, the literacy programs? One of the biggest concern, and I will tell you, this is something I should have, since the federal changes, real pressure has been put on our feeding programs. So we run a food pantry. This food pantry, more than ever, people rely on the food pantry, because there are a lot of people who are finding
Where is it?
themselves. It's right here, 518 Bushwick Avenue. And more people than ever rely on our food pantry. And the federal funding for food has collapsed. And we're going to have to run that as a volunteer effort. And so, I'm looking for folks to help us make sure that we can do that.
I want to make sure I get all this, Karen. You have a tremendous amount of affordable housing. You have your senior centers. You have food delivery,
Meals on Wheels, right?
food pantry.
Food pantry.
What else are
Educational
food?
pro ESL, GED, after school for kids. We run programs for those who have criminal justice involvement. So we get this great program where if a person has been involved with the criminal justice system, sometimes in violent felonies too. So this is not, how is it that we work with that person to really impact recidivism? It's recognizing that when someone is criminally justice involved, it's not just them, it's their family. It's mothers and fathers and
Sure.
sisters and brothers and, kids. And so we run programs to help folks in those circumstances as well. As I said, if you think about anything that's essential to keeping a community vibrant and strong, Riseboro is involved in it. That's what we do. We partner with United Way or partner with Self Help or Help USA or St. Nick's Alliance or Los Suarez or
Love it.
UJO. Whoever it is, we'll partner with whoever in order to bring the right services to the community, because at the heart, it's really about the person and their needs. And how do we address those needs? How do we make sure they get the help that they so desperately deserve?
What boroughs are those 1,000 units coming to? The future of planned housing that you have?
We just are bringing them online now in Queens at Baisley Pond. So that's 319 units that are coming online right now out at Baisley Pond, Queens. We have a new unit here in Brooklyn and DeKalb. We have a couple more units in the Bronx.
Wow. That's really terrific to hear your reach and your scale. So, what do you see as far as the future with Riseboro? Is there anything that you see on the horizon that's going to expand or change in terms of your mission or services?
I think that for us as an organization, our roots are here in Ridgewood and Bushwick. So we have a real robust social service network here. And this is our home. This is our laboratory for solving the problems of poverty. At the same time, as we move to other parts of the city, we're looking for how is it that we take this learning here and bring it elsewhere? Not just simply to the city, but where else in the state or even beyond the state can we bring this learning? What is it that we're learning here of how things have worked that can have application elsewhere? But at the heart of it, we're very conscious of not being seen as an agency. When I hear folks say, oh, how's the agency? We're not an agency. Because once we get into agency, I think that we get impersonal. We're neighbors who help neighbors. And so, therefore, it really is incumbent upon us to try every day to ensure that we get community feedback. Look, Riseboro gets some things wrong. It's hard for us managing some of our
Wow, you're
properties.
admitting you're not perfect? Is that what's
Yeah,
happening?
I go to see the properties. I give our residents, our tenants, my personal phone number and say, please call me anytime. And I know that sometimes we do not deliver the dignified housing that they deserve. And that's because we just don't have the resources to make those investments the way we need to. That is to our shame. We've got to figure that out. We've been lucky that, Senator Gillibrand, she and Senator Schumer were able to get $5 million into the federal budget for us to do housing preservation. Antonio Reynoso, the borough president, he was really good. He got us $15 million in preservation money.
Wow.
Our city council members got us money in for preservation. But the fact is, the amount of work that needs to be done, when you consider the number of roofs and the number of windows and the number of mechanical systems, we need a lot more. So we have to do the best job we can with the resources we have, continue to try to find other resources, but we have a long way to go. And I know that that is not always satisfactory to some of our tenants because they feel like they're already on the margins of society and that we're treating them like they're in the margins. And my hope is to always, by my own personal example, say, look, I may not be able to solve this immediate problem for you, but you can yell at me and you can express your frustration because you have a right to be frustrated. And I can promise you that I will try as best I can, but I can't promise that I'm actually going to be able to deliver at the end of the day because there are certain constraints I'm operating under.
Well, Karen, I mean, it's been a pleasure to hear the services that you guys are providing and the work that you're doing. And I hope that money keeps flowing in and you could provide more and more housing and services to New York City residents. So thank you.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with you and to share our story with your audience.
Well, it's a pleasure and, keep up the good work.
All right, we'll look forward to seeing you out here.
Thanks so much.